some of the websites, then you can go look at those and explore those a little bit, okay? All right. So I'm going to go ahead and get started. We're right on time. My name is Kat Rocco, and I am the OPI Regional Consultant for RTI, the RTI project. I also work with Nancy Marks, the Region 5 CSPD trainer. I train in instructional coaching and also the Big Four from Kansas University. And I'm a retired, I'm a retired special ed director. I was a special ed director for Sandus County Educational Services Cooperative for 22 years. In 2007, I retired, and this is what I do now. And I do a lot of it, and I love it. I absolutely love it. I've gone to Kansas, become very familiar with Lawrence, Kansas, and done a lot of training there. We're developing all of the, if your school isn't one of the RTI schools, we do all the training for the elementary and secondary RTI project, and we'll be, again, starting those in September of this year. So, and you'll get my email address at the end, and if you have any questions, I'm always available. So with that, I need to know what you guys do. So how many of you are elementary teachers, parents, support staff? Mostly all elementary. Any secondary? A few. Any administrators? Okay, all right, great. So with that, that was kind of helpy because I've got some examples of videos that I'll show you, and I'll try to stick more to the elementary example so that you can kind of relate a little bit. I'm not Kevin Honeycutt. Wouldn't he be awesome? I'm going to be teaching you some more fundamental things about in your classroom. But there's integration of some new strategies that we're exploring that are research validated, that have a lot of push behind them for getting kids going. And then once you get them going, then how can you integrate technology to keep them going? So what we're going to do is basically we're going to talk a little bit about the Big Four, what the Big Four is. And then we're going to, and how those strategies can increase student learning. And then we're going to talk about classroom management as one of the Big Four. Please remember, as I discuss this, when I teach the Big Four class, it takes 3 to 4 days to do that class. And when we teach about classroom management, that's a full day of training. So it's going to be hard to impart all of that information. We're good. Cindy, thank you. In 2 hours. So I will overview some of the high points and give you some information about when further training will take place, and I hope that will be beneficial for you. You'll have on the top of the handout, it talks a little bit about the Big Four. The Big Four, as seen through the eyes of Kansas University, is classroom management, content enhancement, instruction, and assessment for learning. And the reason they came up with these four areas came out of about, 30 years of strategic instruction model, which is a way that we look at how we teach kids learning strategies and content enhancement that was developed by Kansas University, primarily for kids who are learning disabled. And from that evolved into what they call the Instructional Coaching Project. And the Instructional Coaching Project has been going on for about 15 years now. And their focus was, okay, so we can go coach teachers because we know that the best professional development you can get is somebody supporting you when you need support. It's not me standing up here telling you in an overview that this is really good stuff, because what the research tells us is that 95% of you will listen and will never implement it again. Okay, without some sort of support system, this will not carry theory into practice. So instructional coaching evolved out of that as a way that we can actually make practice happen with a support system. One of the most involved schools in instructional coaching or districts right now is Bozeman School District. Anybody from Bozeman? Bozeman School District now has a cadre of about, they had 4 instructional coaches and now they've got 8. And I know that you guys have teachers on special assignments here, Matt Tosis, that work as coaches. I've trained with and been a party to a lot of training that they've done. So when Kansas came up with this, And many states have totally embraced the coaching model. As opposed to professional development that is stand and deliver, they have hired coaches to come and help teachers with things to help change kind of the way we look at education. And in my 30 years, I have never seen such an exciting time for changing the education. So what they said is, okay, now we've got these coaches, what are they going to work on? What categories can we put the main things that teachers need to know about into? And they come up with classroom management, content enhancement, instruction, and assessment for learning. So I'll talk a little bit about what those are. Classroom management, the book that this is centered onto is from Randy Sprick, State and Civil Schools. It's called Coaching Classroom Management. And the website for Randy Sprick is on the page that you've got in front of you, I believe. And what he talks about are four things that are measurable in classroom management. Measurable. Time on task, ratios of positive interactions, opportunities for students to respond, and reduction of disruption. Those are the measurable things he talks about. And I'll get into that a little bit more as we go along. Content planning, this is the information that came out of the SIM 30 years of research. And it's primarily looking at organizational charts to teach main ideas and concepts. When we use the unit map, we use the concept map, and I'll show you what those look like as we progress through. Instruction, what kinds of devices, what kinds of questioning, how can we center good instruction around techniques, strategies that are research validated? And assessment for learning, how can we motivate and monitor progress and ensure that mastery learning is occurring? Now, some of you might have a kind of a question about what we're talking about here, classroom management, as opposed to behavior management. And I'm going to get into that as we go along. This is on your handout. And there are three books that I use. I use Instructional Coach from Jim Knight. I use Coaching Classroom Management from Randy Sprick. And I use The Unmistakable Impact that Jim Knight put out about this time last year. He will have another book coming out called The Big Four, but it isn't out just yet. But if you go to, let me see if I got a red light here. But if you go to, you're on your computer, if you're online, you go to instructionalcoach.org. And I don't want to mess this up, so I'm not going to show you how. But just go to instructionalcoach.org. If you can.
The internet is down.
Oh, the internet is down? Okay. Well, let me move on. InstructionalCoach.org is a website put up by Kansas University. It's primarily for instructional coaching. However, in the left-hand corner of that home page is a button you can click on. It's called the Big Four Name. And if you click on that, it opens you to all of the teachers who are across the country talking about the Big Four that I just talked about how do you increase content enhancement, how do you do different instructional strategies. And down the left-hand side, there are actually three manuals that you can download for each of these categories that kind of walk you through what the category is. If you look at the instructionalcoach.org site, across the top it says presentations, handouts, all the stuff that these guys do for instructional coaching, except for the books, is free. So you can walk yourself through Unmistakable Impact. You can walk yourself through what they call the partnership principles. And the partnership principles are basically when a coach is working with you, if you're working with your a partner, a group partner, if you're working with your grade level team, what you want to do is make sure that everybody is heard and understood, and we learn to work together. What we've done in education for many, many years is close the door and have a cottage industry. That won't work anymore. Kevin Honeycutt just gave wonderful examples about how that won't work anymore. We have to use each other, and we are each other's best resource, because you're right there to help somebody. You're not waiting for MBI people to come to your school or somebody else to come to your school. You need to make sure that each other, you all have the same resources and you're sharing those resources. So that's what these guys are doing on these websites like the Big Four Name. So, briefly, the Big Four, as I said, is content. And the content is to understand what you do all year long and how it applies to the standards. So if you haven't aligned with the standards yet, you need to make sure that that's something that you do. Because aligning with the standards will help you concentrate on the content that's relevant. Developing a year-long plan on how your curriculum aligns with the standards. Making sure that through the course of the year you can look at 10 essential questions that will be answered and aligned with the standards. And 10 essential concepts. The difference between a question and a concept? A concept is an idea, right? It's something you want kids to know. The question can evolve from the concept, but you want them to have an understanding of both. Identify and provide simple and correct, easy to understand definitions or answers to questions and concepts. The way they do this through the SIM project is the use of, first they call it a course organizer, and then that comes down to a unit organizer. This is an example of a unit organizer, and how that's used in content enhancement is basically, if I'm going to come up with 10 different areas that are very important to my content and align with the standards, what I want to do is have the big picture. So the big picture for the Civil War is the roots and consequences of civil unrest. That's where I'm going. In this whole area that I'm going to talk about, that's what aligns with the standards, right? So when I'm deciding how this is going to work, I decide what part of that is going to be the organization for my class presentation. And these are unit organizer maps that there's a way to get online that you can share with each other. So if you're working with a cadre of third grade teachers, you say, we need to do community. We need to do, so you put it onto Google, and you start filling it out. Another teacher says, no, I want to do this. And the teacher says, well, I think this would be a good idea. And you come up with what the format, now you've aligned your curriculum. It's not difficult to do, but there is a little more to it than just what I'm showing you. You can look at the SIM, S-I-M, information that's online from Kansas University and get more about this. So, and once we've looked at our organization, we want to look at what those guiding questions are. And so we line those out. We look at the knowledge structure that we want kids to have a good foundation in. And we want to make sure that that knowledge structure is cross-content, right? So if I'm using compare and contrast, which is number one on Marzano's 9, then I want to make sure that the kids understand the language of compare and contrast, as it applies to social studies, as it applies to math, as it applies to reading. So when I'm making maps like this with the kids, they can see that that is the language that permeates learning. And when they see on a test, compare and contrast, oh yeah, we did that. We did that here, we did that there. I know exactly what it is. Educational vocabulary is what hangs up a lot of kids on testing situations. They've had exposure to it, but maybe not enough exposure to be able to make sure that it's part of their language. This is an example of a concept diagram as done through SIM. This is one of my favorite tools to use because you can just go through and have kids generate ideas and put them where they belong. My daughter is taking classes to become a teacher, and she was using this just the other day to teach composite numbers. That's it. Big math is on my forte. And at the end, that's what they did. After they went through a PowerPoint presentation, played some games, in order to do the formative assessment component of that, she put one of these up, and the kids started generating what are good examples, what are sometimes present, and what is never present, along with the vocabulary that was relative to the content. LED. The kids use whiteboards, looking up the answers. Right now, I know who got the concept and who didn't, and we're done. I'm going to take those few kids who didn't, and I'm going to move on and have to, and there she is right there. My daughter.
Hi.
Hello.
It's downstairs in the
bed. There's an announcement. Do you want to announce it? The internet is backed up. There's a different password, so the new password is Clarkwork, all one word. Mark Thor.
What do you get for a username?
Same username. Ruby Gilbert.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
Bruce,
yes.
Yes.
Okay, so those are some of the ideas that are used in content enhancement. There are a multitude of different learning tools connected to this, but those are just two of the main things. And the purpose of this is not just to use it for the students to learn with, but for you to use it as a planning tool. And one of the best things that I've seen about this, as I've been a special ed director for years and years, is that when I look at something that I'm planning, I can look at how I'm going to differentiate one of the sections for some of my learners based upon their particular skills that they bring. So the activity might be that we're going to have events in the U.S., and some of my kids are going to do computer research. And some of my kids are not going to do computer research. I'm going to give them the material to read, but I'm going to differentiate how they would attack this task based upon what I know about them already. And I can plan for that ahead of time by making sure that I've looked at my content and I have it mapped out. So this is instruction. We know who this guy is. Remember this guy? Ferris Bueller Day Off. Class. What we don't want is people not being engaged in instruction. So we need to make sure that in the big four, during in the instructional components, we talk about understanding how to model thinking, asking a variety of cognitive level questions, providing constructive feedback effectively, and organizing instruction well, and as well as scaffolding, a multitude of different scaffolding approaches. And we also talk a lot about mechanical versus metaphorical learning. And basically what that is mechanical is going to be using cooperative learning strategies, stories, experiential, dialogue, lots of things that connect with what Kevin was talking about would be under metaphorical, right? So approach it with basically the fund of information that's out there on the web, or different ways to show me how you know something. And that's the more metaphorical. What do you think that means? This is what we typically do. In a survey of that was done by Kansas University of more than 1,000 classrooms, they went in and took logs on what kinds of questions teachers were asking. K-12, what kinds of questions are teachers asking most of the time? Almost all of them were mechanical questions. Like 92% were mechanical questions. And why was that so? Not because of what the teachers did wrong. That's what the publishers put in their books. That, I mean, we have to go through these books with a fine-tooth comb to decide what is relevant and what is not. The publishers will address a multitude of different kinds of learning, but they do it in a very select way. So if you want to enhance higher level thinking skills, you have to ask more metaphorical questions, which may or may not be in the text that you're using. So you have to make sure that you're planning those out. There actually is in the big four name under the instructional component is a question asking strategy where you would list questions you're going to be using in any given presentation. And you can identify whether they're going to all be metaphorical or if they're all going to be mechanical. And you can, all of this stuff, you can find information on that instructionalcoach.org website.
Questions?
Oh, no, sorry. Okay. In our instructional coaching, we don't care if you use the big four or if you use Marzano's 9 or what approach you standardize your school with. The point being that you do it with something. And the purpose for that is so it's measurable. And measurable to you. You want to know how you are teaching, right? I mean, in the RTI project, one of the number one things that middle schools and high schools put down that they need training on is effective instructional strategies. Because if it's not working, we need to do something different. Think out of the box, come up with something else, try it, and move forward. If it's not working, we need to do something different. When I get to talking about classroom management, that's a huge part of what works and what doesn't for classroom management. If I put a kid on the wall for 3 years because his behavior at recess is so bad, did it work? Obviously not. If we send him to the office for 2 years, he knows the secretary and her schedule, they'll pass, but he still can't read. So if it's not working, if our instructional strategy isn't working, we need to measure that and then come up with something else to fill the gap. So, and the last of the big four is assessment for learning. This is huge to me. The word assessment comes from a Latin verb that means to sit with. Not something you do to somebody, it's somebody you do with someone. And I think we kind of lost that in the whole assessment component, right? I can't teach you how to swim if we never get in the water. If we never get in the water. I can't give you a book and say read pages 22 to 39 and do part of an instructional lesson and say, now finish that up and do the questions and think that that's going to hit every learner. Will it hit a lot of your learners? Absolutely. But our motivation is to hit all learners, not just the ones who can do it easily. So we have to make sure that when we're doing assessments, we're sitting with the kids getting the stuff. So the best kind of assessment, and there's a ton of research on this, comes from the black box research of Williams and Black, which was done in, 96, I think. And they firmly put down the best kind of assessment is formative assessment. Well, there's tons of ways to do. I actually have a PowerPoint that I use that has 102 ways to do formative assessment. There are so many simple ways to do formative assessment, but a lot of times it's a step that we miss. We move right to summative assessment. So, is a quiz formative or summative?
Usually summative.
It doesn't have to be.
Right.
But it usually is. When we give the spelling words out on Monday and the kids take the pretest, is it formative or summative? It's supposed to be formative, isn't it? So, if the kids have all of those words and they know them all really well, do they get the same lesson as everybody else? They shouldn't get a challenge. They got a whole week to be challenged. So you have to have a whole lot of other material ready based upon, hopefully, the formative nature of the pretest that you give. Does that mean more work for teachers? Absolutely. It absolutely does. But if we're not using that information to make decisions for how we're going to teach the next lesson, then what's the value of it? So we need to do a lot of thinking about the kind of assessments that we do every day and how they change what we're going to do. Jim Knight says, assessment for learning is a crucial component of effective instruction. When students clearly understand their learning targets and their progress towards those learning targets, they are motivated. One of the best tools that ever came out of all of the things that we attack, attempt, abandon in education, it's an ongoing cycle. I mean, you've been around, right? Between Tessa and Jessa and Project Wild and, yeah, me too. One of them was precision teaching. Raise your hand if you still have precision teaching. You still have those big spiders?
No, but I,
That was a wonderful tool. Actually, they're still making it kind of in a, Sophus Web still has an online sort of form of it. But why was it such a wonderful tool? Because the kids did 1 minute timing, and then they charted their progress on the 1 minute timing. It was 4 minutes. And they loved it. They absolutely loved it. I'm going to show you some things that you, well, I don't know if I have time, but if I have time, I'll show you some things that are, with whole brain teaching being done right now that are related to that. So, clearly tell students, you want to clearly tell students how they're performing, clearly tell teachers how well the students are performing. The formative assessments need to be easy, and they need to take very little time to implement. And then they need to inform instruction. Alright, so that's the big four. What I want you to do is to turn to your neighbor and talk, or that's three of the big four, turn to your neighbor and talk a little bit about if any of the things that I've said thus far make sense, if it makes sense to do any of those instructional strategies. Take just a minute and do that. Because primarily, what we've learned from lots of coaches is that teachers will say to coaches, I need help with teaching this lesson on photosynthesis, or fractions, or whatever. And when coaches go in, they might need help on teaching that, but the first thing that has to be organized is how the class is managed in order to be able to get to the subject matter. So that's why when we teach the big four, we start with classroom management. And as I've gone through this, I've kind of gone, maybe that's not, you know, I mean, if you had your content down, but then it always comes back to haunt me, because I'll go visit a class, and the first thing I'll see is, we need to work on some classroom management. And because it's not that class. This is really an interesting class. There's about almost 40 kids in that class, and the boys all sit on one side, and the girls all sit on the other.
How old?
I think it was taken during the 1920s. Jim, I gave you this picture, so I'm not sure. Pardon? Somewhere on Eastern Montana. But the girls will sit over, there's multiple ages in there. The pencil boxes, the fact that they're all sitting on their hands is really interesting. And there's probably only one teacher, and I bet there was only one teacher in the classroom. What was one of the things, besides all of the obvious, that was probably really, really significant about that classroom?
They they know their expectations. They've got the classroom management in hand.
Yes. Probably in hand. I'm thinking behind her was a paddle.
Yeah,
they're
yeah.
not happy. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, she's not smiling. I always think about this class, and when I think about this class, I think about when Hot Springs, Montana first came into the co-op, and I was a special ed director. My brother ranches in Hot Springs, and my nephews went to school in Hot Springs. And when I first came on as a co-op director there, there were hardly any special ed kids in the classroom in Hot Springs. I mean, maybe 3 to 4. And it was a bigger school than it is now. All of those schools were quite a bit bigger. But if you had a problem with a kid, you called home, and you probably didn't have a problem the next day. Whatever stall he was mucking out, or fancy had to fix, or whatever, changed the behavior almost immediately. When I left Hot Springs in 2007, that was not the case anymore. Not at all. I mean, it's not a ranching family, or not a ranching community. It's a ranching community, but that's not the primary population that's in the school now. But in those years, which was about maybe 15 years, the difference between how it had changed, as all of our schools had changed, changed that classroom, hopefully, to this classroom. Because now we have a whole new genre, right, of kids who have a whole new way of learning. I mean, what they say, the research says that 64% of kids are now visual learners. Right? And in those days, they were auditory learners. I mean, that's what you did. You sat around the table and you learned from your parents talking, and you learned from your teacher talking, and that's how you got the majority of your information. You think about these kids now, almost all the time, you're doing exactly what you're doing. They're looking at some screen. They're looking at something electronic. They spend approximately 7 hours and 20 minutes a day engaged with some sort of electronic. And they spent approximately 37 minutes engaged with some form of homework. So if we don't do what Kevin Huntsup is talking about and figure out different ways, then we've lost them. We have to engage them. And I'm going to show you lots of ways that aren't electronic to engage them. But it is one of the major things that needs to be incorporated in our instruction. So, turn to your neighbor briefly and define classroom management. Just, what do you think classroom management means? Okay, so somebody shout out some one word. Classroom management means?
Organization.
Expectations.
Atmosphere.
Procedures.
Teach shoes.
Yeah, that is good. Great, those are all part of being classroom management. Is it difficult?
Yeah.
It is difficult. Why are you in this session? Are you here because of student behavior? Or classroom management?
Both.
Okay. Student behavior is a result of classroom management, right? Can we agree on that?
Okay.
So we're going to talk about simple solutions. No, we're not talking about that. We're going to talk about understanding that in any behavioral situation, there are two clients, the teacher and the student. Okay? You won't change the student's behavior without the teacher trying something different. Comes back to that kid on the wall. We have to do something different in order to catch this kid, in order to get this kid to buy in. So there's two ways we can do that. We can add to your toolkit, give you some new ideas and things to try, and we can have a process that supports you. The process I like best is coaching. The process is not at the office. That will not change either your behavior or the student's behavior. one principal, one of my RTIs, or a superintendent said, my principals don't have any time to do anything because from the time they get there in the morning till they leave, they have a line of kids outside. And it's like, that won't work. It's not gonna, it's not helping the kids. And it certainly isn't making this a learning community.
But the principal can't torture as much as
the teacher.
A lot more miserable than the principal.
That's right.
Because you're with them.
Yeah. Or it can make life a lot more engaging. That's the one word I didn't hear. Is engaging. And engagement is the key to good classroom management. I taught this class in this building last year, and I asked the middle school high school teacher from Frenchtown. She said, you know, I know when my kids are engaged because I know how, if I spent enough time on that lesson, I've got it. If I didn't have time, well, if the lesson wasn't any good, then I've lost some of them and then I have behaviors. So how can we enhance that? How can we give you more tools to get your buy-in? We're going to focus on the teachers. This session is primarily to focus on the teachers. And we're not talking about kids who have, I'm not going to talk a lot about kids who have hardcore learning problems, emotionally disturbed, kids on the spectrum. I'm not talking about those really hardcore kids. Some of those kids, these techniques will work for because they're engaging, and I'll show you some of those. But some of them, they might not fit into that realm. But the percentage of those kids, for the most part, are we have special ed teachers in here? A few. Okay. The percentage of those teachers, for the most part, except for your classes, is a little lower. But I'm going to show you some techniques that even work well in some kids in classrooms where you have a higher percentage. So not all kids come to us motivated and nor responsible, right? Some are. Some are a little bit, and some are at risk, and it's tough to fit. What we want to do is support a structure that basically gives you the framework that will engage students. Okay? So I'm going to show you how this is usually done. It's usually done with rules. Now, you bear with me here because I have to... There we go. I have to figure out this computer as I'm doing this. Sorry about that. Technology is not my computer. Would you tap my technologist on the... Can you help with this?
I can try.
I want that right there that I highlighted to play. Yep. Flip over here. Well, yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Can you see if somebody can, so I have a number of videos, and so I'll just talk about this one. But you can find somebody to do that, that'd be great. So this is a video that talks about the rules of the classroom, right? How many of you do something, I've just got so many elementary teachers in here, that is the rules of the classroom at the beginning of school, right? What do you do? Do you have a song? Do you have a poster just on the wall?
We have
a poster and have a certain set of rules that say across the
school of expectations.
Okay. So, give me an example.
No hooded
sweatshirt.
No hooded sweatshirt.
You're not allowed to have to have
them on. Okay. So, we have rules across our classroom. But I have a kid come up with those rules. So they own that more so than me saying these are the rules. They have to own those rules. And so we come up with them as a class.
Okay, so you come up with those.
Yeah.
Other ideas? Anybody else got anything? We have school wide, we have high.
We have school wide, and ours are set as everybody, and we go through these the first couple of days until they're in grade, or hopefully, is, you know, you have to raise your hand for permission to speak. You have to stay in your seat at all times. You have to ask to get up and show respect to others, and we go through all of that. But, and then that's kind of a class, that's a campus rule, I guess I would say, and then we have our own room rule, you know, as well.
Okay. So, very well. We'll see what these are. This is a standard set of rules, and I'm going to show you two examples. One is a standard set of rules that's kind of like exactly what you guys are talking about. And another is a set of rules that, anybody here familiar with whole brain teaching? Okay, I'm going to show you about whole brain teaching. Chris Biffle, guy from California. Chris Biffle, and you can go to wholebrainteaching.com. One of the websites is on the very bottom of the second page. And once again, this stuff is all free. The manuals for what I'm going to show you are free. The videos are free. And it is some of the most dynamic stuff that's out there for engagement. And there's a set of rules that's very uniform to it that we... Found no picture. That's all right. So, just start it now?
Yep.
All right, so when I go to the next one, that shouldn't be a problem?
That shouldn't be a problem,
so I'm
just
going to wear it. Oh, okay. That's all right. Thank you guys for bearing with me here.
Girls, this is Mr. Staley, your friendly neighborhood fence inspector. You didn't remember the five rules of our classroom? Blue, 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 blue
download that one off of YouTube if you're interested. Rules of the classroom.
Let me go to here. And, this is whole grade teaching. These kids have already been taught this information. But it's the same rules for every class, kindergarten through college. And they're very simple. And for some reason...
Class,
yes,
Captain,
Captain,
Gerald, would you come up and meet us in the hall, please?
Maybe not. So, what I want to do is talk about how do you set clear expectations. Have you seen this one before? Oh, all right. Okay. So what I want you to do is, without using any vulgar language or inappropriate slang, work at your table groups and list 10 body parts that have only 3 letters. Okay?
And
10 body parts that have only 3 letters. Somebody put them down. Would that have met my expectations?
Yeah. So were my expectations really clear? That's right. So, expectations. You have to make sure your expectations are clear. Students never have to guess what you expect of them. What Stegen says is, why do you want to make it a mystery? And oftentimes, I don't think we do want to make it a mystery. It's perception. I can say things and you will perceive them one way, right? And somebody else will perceive them a different way. So kids are going to have, they're going to come with different language. They're going to come with different ways to interpret language. They're going to have different expectations. Setting your expectations is very important. One of the ways we do this, using chants from Randy Spirit. It's on your handout. Okay, so we use, for every lesson that you write, you can do chants. Some teachers do it with a flip chart, or you can put it on a smart board. For everything that you're doing, you have different expectations. If they're going to do seat work, you have one set of expectations. If they're going to work in cooperative groups, you have another set of expectations. If they're going to work independently, you always have a different set of expectations. I've seen teachers who've taken big flip charts, right? And they tab them out to the side, and they have flipped to independent activity. These are our chance expectations for an independent writing activity. And it would be conversation. Are the students allowed to talk at any time? If you want them to talk, then absolutely. You would put for C, students can talk to their table partners to get this task accomplished. H, how do I ask for help? Do I come to your desk? Do I raise my hand? How do I ask for help? How many kids get in trouble because they're asking for help in an inappropriate way? So you teach how you want them to ask for help. What is the activity? What is the task? What do you want me to accomplish? Diggins, target on the wall. So you write down, this is the task for a writing activity. That's why a smart board works really well for this, if you have it. Movement. Can I get up and sharpen my pencil? Can I walk to the hall? Can I go ask Johnny a question? Can I come to your desk? Why are you out of your chair again? Right? If we can minimize all of that by front-loading expectations for any activity that we want to create. And participation. Kids in middle school and high school get poor participation grades all the time because they don't know what participation looks like. So if you want to define what participation looks like, you put, what does appropriate student work and behavior look like for this activity, or this transition, or this sound? And at every time you do it, you show them exactly what that's going to, what the expectation is. Minimize those disruptions before they start. And if you do that, pretty soon you've got everybody understanding what the expectations are for this activity. And when someone new comes into the room, they can say, oh, I'll show you what the expectations are for this. Kids will learn it really, really quickly, and they will come to expect that you've noted it. So, setting your expectations ahead of time. Time on task. The amount of time on task behavior exhibited by students. These are measurable things. You can measure expectations. You can measure time on task. What research has determined is that the amount of time spent monitoring during a classroom presentation far outweighs, and the amount of time off task far outweighs the active instruction. More importantly, what they found is that active instruction, when used appropriately, results in the highest achievement scores. So what we know is that we have to keep kids engaged all the time in order to make sure that they learn the material. If they're asked to do something that's independent practice for an extended period of time, then they're not going to miss it. What we know about brain-based research is that for the most part, most adults can't even stay on task for more than 15 minutes. They do something to distract themselves after a little while. You're reading, you're studying, you look up, or you write something down. I mean, think about the different things you do when you're trying to get something done in order to motivate yourself to keep going. In a classroom, a lot of kids don't have that option. because I've given you half an hour to get this done. Well, maybe what I need to do is break that up. More hands-on activities. The next one is ratio of interactions. It's the single most important thing that a teacher can do to improve overall behaviors, and that's connecting with their students. The ratio of positive to negative in your classroom should be 3-1. So the research that was done on special ed classrooms is that it's usually 6-1, negative to positive. That's not because special ed teachers mean to do that. Look at the population that they have, right? A negative comment is, you need to put all four of the your feet on your chair now, right? It's not that negative is bad. It's not, because it's not bad. It's what we do. You know, I mean, think about your own kids. It's what you do. But we need to outweigh that. The whole idea of positive behavior support, Montana MBI, look at the national, the research that's been done, is that we outweigh negative statements with positive. Because you will get the behavior that you reward. So, if a student is engaged, how you measure that is really simple. There's lots of ways you can do it. Just keep your own little data. Put paper clips in your pocket. And I'll start out with all of the positive paper clips in one pocket, and then every time you make a negative comment in a 10-minute period of time, put a paper clip in the other pocket. I got 10 over here. In 15 minutes, have I moved 6 of them? Or have somebody come in and keep the data for you? My favorite story about this is a friend of mine, Ron Griffin, is the middle school principal of Libby Middle School, which is now Libby Elementary because the elementary closed, and anyway, everybody's all in one building now. And at one point in time, Ron went around to all the teachers. I was doing training up there on this information. And he went around to all the teachers and he measured time on task with his 30-some-odd teachers. And they came up with about 84% time on task. And he did this over 3 times, came up with the average time, spent about 5 minutes in the classroom, took a number of months to do that, just so we could get a baseline for how are we going to improve that. So once we had the baseline, then we began talking about how do you improve time on task, how do you get kids more engaged, how can you move forward with that. And then the teacher's going to work on that. So before I left that training time, I said, now I want you to take a sticky note and put it up here. Do you think you do 3-1 positives to negatives? Or where are you on the line? More negatives than positives, more positives than negatives. Where do you think you are? And so all the teachers put their little sticky note up there. And all of them were, guess where they were? Yeah. I mean, there was probably, out of 30-some-odd teachers, there were probably 2 or 3 on this end. All of the rest of them were, oh yeah, we're really positive. So then Ron did the same thing again with positive statements. Just spent about 5 minutes in every teacher's classroom, came back, 2 negatives to every positive with the attitude in school. Not that they want to be that way, but if nobody ever gives you feedback on it, then you don't know. You don't know what you're doing. I mean, I was trained in the old TESA model, right? Anybody here ever do TESA? Okay, TESA. You go around and you give feedback on whether or not you're interacting with all the kids. You don't know you're doing that until somebody gives you the feedback. And then you go, oh, I mean, it's like keeping a diet journal, right? You don't know I'm eating all of that junk until I write it all down. Oh, what I ate today. So you want to make sure that you have feedback on what is, because this is very important. This is one of the major things that changes behavior in classroom, is that positive statement. And the last one is opportunities to respond. High levels of active engagement during lessons are associated with higher levels of achievement and student motivation. What we want is explicit and systematic teaching. In fact, one of the most important features is direct instruction, is the kids are always engaged. That's why it works so well. They're really engaged in what's going on. And group responses, paired partner responses, individual responses, written responses, physical responses, those are the best types of engagement according to my buddy Anita Archer.
What I'm going to show you from whole brain teaching is what I call Anita Archer on steroids. So if any of you have ever seen Anita Archer teach a class with me online, this is way more engaging. So, let's look at a video. This one is high school kids. This is the whole brain teaching with high school kids.
Lost my spot here.
And there are a lot of these strategies that you can,
class,
yes, or an online.
I'm going to learn about close up lines. Now, there's four types of lines. We have lines that go up, lines that go down, horizontal lines, and vertical lines. Near me, please. There's four types of lines. We have lines that go up, lines that go down, horizontal lines, and vertical lines. North, I'd like you to tell the South about the four types of lines we have. Having to follow the line and break so many pieces. One of the things for that. positive. Lines are going down when the slope is negative. We have fours on the line, slope is zero. And when we have vertical lines, they're falling off.
What is pyramids of RTI? What is green? What is yellow? What is red? So, and then it talks about what would be green, yellow, red according to the way that it's measured over on the right-hand side. So looking at your class, think about your classroom and what's written here and what we've learned. Think about time on task, opportunities to respond, and ratio of interactions. If the green on this sheet were the gold standard, where are you? Take a few minutes and think about that in your classroom.
Yeah.
Okay, now share with your neighbor what kinds of things, how well do you think you do those three things as compared to the gold standard? And what kinds of things could you do to improve? I want you to process a little bit. What kinds of, beginning of the year, what could you get more information on? What could I improve on? How could I have somebody come in and check me for it? You now have a chart. So if you want to be able to check out and see how you're doing, you can have somebody else keep the eyes for you. Or you can set up a flip camera and keep your own camera.
Is there a somewhere where we can have
it's in the book called Deep Classroom Management. And if you check, see me downstairs, I can show you the book. And it works with, they've been doing it now for 12 years,
They've collected quite a bit of research. There's Bible Talk College, and actually you can find every video that I show is available on YouTube. And if you go to wholebrain.com, wholebrainteaching.com, every manual for everything that how you teach all this stuff is downloadable for free.
I was intrigued to see high school students doing physical movements.
The physical movement is one of the major components. Mm-hmm. For almost everything we do, there is a kinesthetic physical movement connected with it.
And
the
opposite students had to mirror what they were doing.
Yeah.
So everyone, I was like, are they talking at the same time, but they weren't? It was
mirroring. Mirroring. Mirror. Mirror. And you think about this for a minute. I mean, when I taught my Big Four class last year, and I had about three or four elementary or kindergarten, first, secondary teachers in my Big Four class, and when we discovered this and started going through it, they immediately went to their classes to see if they could do it with them, and it worked. First time, every time, it worked. With some of the lowest, the teachers who were in the training in Arizona, it was a whole district. I mean, the training was free. I'd have to go for free. Because they brought them in to train a bunch of Phoenix, the whole section of Phoenix teachers, 250 teachers. And the special ed teachers were, is this going to work for an emotionally disturbed kid? Because I worked with two teachers, I was teamed with two teachers from middle school and high school who work in specifically ED schools. And they talked about, the gal who was there from California talked about the severe kids. She had videotape of her classroom. Not one classroom had under 35 kids.
Wow.
Inner city LA. I mean, the videotape of those kids was like, okay, that's scary. They're all gang members. They're middle school kids who are gang members, you know. And how they caught on and engaged in this was fascinating. So I got to tell you that I honestly think it's, and I'm not saying, you know, you integrate it with the other things. You integrate it with unit organizers. You integrate it with good teaching that you do already.
What was she doing with the little thing on the board?
It's called the scoreboard.
Okay, a tender or something like that.
Wasn't
your so
was
she catching them that they weren't doing
it? No, if they gave, if I said class and you said yes, I would say good response, that's a point for you.
So it was class, teacher, is that what was
that, that's what was up there.
Okay, I didn't understand.
They played for something that they decided. Extra time, extra recess, whatever. And then you kind of start eliminating it. Right?
Yeah, over time.
Over time. Because you're always, it's never going to be any more than like 3 to 2. You don't want tons of points up there. You start fresh every day. You know, or you're going to start fresh with every change of groups. But there, and it teaches you, you can go and find scoreboard, and it'll show you how to use the scoreboard in the material.
I don't know if this is sidetracking or not, but I want to use this really bad this year in my class, but I'm thinking of my incoming students, and I can think of one in particular who is a little autistic boy, and can we brainstorm, or do you have ideas about how to get him to buy into that, if there's something I could...
What they talked about, and I haven't done this myself, so you know, but what they talked about is even those kids would participate at some level, right? So
yeah, me just be drawn in anyway.
Oh yeah, they actually, we ended the session by him doing how to write paragraphs using this, and I won't get into that because it's quite complicated. But but you start out with just the five basic rules and the big class gifts, and then you teach mirroring and you just introduce the scoreboard and you go along through this. I mean,
that's all under scoreboard.
Look up on the whole brain teaching, look under scoreboard, and then there is a video that has use of the scoreboard.
And under that, do they teach the mirroring, or is that a different aspect?
That's mirroring is different.
Okay.
But you have to use a down page, a 65-page manual.
Okay.
And it's all free. And Chris Whipple is very clear, just like my friend Jim Knight is very clear about trying to share the best stuff with every teacher, because these people are motivated by kids doing well. It used to be called power teaching, and some, I think it was Cambridge Learning, challenged them on the name of power teaching. So they changed it to whole brain teaching, so they still offer it for free.
Brain teaching.
So
they have those under first steps on the whole brain teaching, the links at the top. The first step's going to have the class, yes, five rules, teach those things carefully. Yeah, you don't have to download it.
No, if you don't want to, you can just look at it. Yeah, right. Yep. Okay, so let me teach you about one more thing that comes from Randy's presentations at the school, and it's called the Stoic Framework. And the Stoic Framework and how it applies to classroom management is understanding that there are some very important variables that you need to manipulate in order to have good classroom management. Structure. Teach, that's the expectation. Observation, interaction, we talked about that, and correcting responsibly and fluently. So structure is the layout of a class. And Amanda got inundated with this, but Fred Jones has a, have you guys seen Fred Jones' video? I like Fred Jones a little bit, but I'm not, you know. I'm not Fred Jones yet. But he does do one videotape that's absolutely cool, and that's on the layout of your classroom. And you have to make sure that you can walk from here to your most difficult student who's sitting probably at least three rows away from you in the shortest possible time.
Proximity.
So that's because proximity is one of your best tools. So you have to make sure that you can get there. When I walk into a classroom, and I did this last year, I walked into a middle or a elementary classroom in Kalispell, actually, and I had to turn around and walk back out again. Because here was a teacher who was quite obvious, never got out of her desk. And it was quite obvious because of the layout of the rows of the room. There was no way she could have gotten into any of the kids who were in the middle of this group. Right? I mean, so that's a crucial piece of education is the environmental structure of your room. So think about that when you're planning for this year, that the best layout is like a herringbone, kind of, where kids can pod, turn around, but you can get in and out. And there might not be room for that, but you want to make sure that you can get in and out and around and to that, what Greg Jones calls the red student, in no more than 3 to 4 steps. Another important thing that Diane Woodard talked about for technology is that you have a computer on your desk that you're collecting. She and I will talk about this section we're doing tomorrow. And it's on your desk, so you can collect data, but it's not, so you can walk by and do it, but it's not visual to the kids. Because it should be your computer, and so you can keep, we actually have performance developed where we're keeping track of data, keeping track of behavior on the fly. And they're in a Google Doc, so the next teacher who has that kid can keep looking at data that you collected and add to it. By the end of the day, guess what? Collected data. What do specialists will always say to you when you're going, I have a terrible time with this kid. What does that mean? Show me the data. I'm the RTI person, remember? Show me the data. If you haven't collected it, if I can't see it, just because you say it happened, there's no decisions that can be made if you don't have on top. So, where you put your computer, overall order of the room, all of those things are instructions. Teaching expectations we talked about. Observing student behavior, circulate, scan, watch for what moments to do that praiseworthy behavior. Use proximity, collect observational data, observe student behavior. This is one of my favorite slides. Okay, so without monitoring, even responsible adults will push the limits. Is that true? I mean, here we live in this state of what is reasonable and prudent. Remember reasonable and prudent? Mm-hmm. How fast did you drive? I live in Sandy County. Highway 200 is my pathway to the world, right? You guys been on Highway 200?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I live in Harris. Which is far down to Highway 200 as you can get without crossing into Idaho.
It's got a lot of wildlife.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's got a lot of wildlife. The then Sheriff Gene Arnold, when asked what was reasonable and prudent for Highway 200, he said, oh, I don't know, 80, 85. I said, good! But you push the limits. There's no doubt about it. Overnight, 7 million children in the U.S. disappeared off the face of the earth forever.
Is that possible?
The year was 1987. The month was April. The day was the 15th. April 15th, 1987, in order to declare abduction for a child, that child had to have a social security number. Prior to that, 7 million kids were abduction. So everybody pushes the limit. So kids are going to push the limit too. Why wouldn't they push the limit? So we need to make sure that we observe student behavior. You can't hold them accountable when they're left to their own devices if you haven't done some observation. Okay. And the next one is interact positively. We talked about that. The behavior you reward is the behavior you get. There is so much clear research on this. I mean, positive behavior support is a required part of RTI in most states. In Montana, we have MBI and we have RTI. Well, we're now working on a grant that what they call braids the two. We have 7 schools in the state of Montana who are the pilot schools for braiding MBI and RTI. You guys, Paxson? Yeah, Paxson's one of them. Because what we're doing is working really hard to play catch up with some of the things that we know work. And correcting fluently, correcting on the fly, making sure that you're correcting kids as you walk through the classroom, that you're not challenging, that you understand that the moment you stop is the moment you lose. The moment you stop to correct that kid is the moment you lose the situation. So you have to figure out ways to correct fluently. Hopefully, you have addressed the problem before it becomes a problem with some of the tools we talked about earlier. And knowing what you know, think about what I've shown you with whole brain teaching. I'm going to show you one more video. What I've shown you with whole brain teaching and how that fits the things that we've been talking about. How the use of that fits. Think about all of the different strategies and then think of whether or not those were working in this situation. Oops, wrong one.
Raise your hand for permission to speak. another good rule for this going to be objective. Objective is what you're going to learn right now. We talked about what we're going to learn numbers, but specifically we're going to talk to number 17 and 18. Tell your partner, hey, people, we're learning numbers 17 and 18.
Hey, people,
Thank you.
It's pretty impressive because I can show you videos from every grade level that were that engaged. So, just to add to your little toolbox, or your big toolbox, probably. Right, so, what things that we talked about did you see? What things? Shout them out.
Mirroring.
But when we're talking about time on task and all those things we talked about, what did you see?
Engagement.
She teaching expectations?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Was she using positive reinforcement?
Yeah.
Continually. The ratio of interactions with the kids was high? Right. So all of the things we talked about, I see in this method of teaching. Now, do you do this 24/7 like she was showing? Probably not. But you can teach kids how to be engaged using a structure like this and get their attention. And they like it. Little rollerballs. Not my thing. Okay, so to conclude, avoid the common myths. Common myths are they're old enough to know how to do it and behave. They are. They won't be. Mine's just turned 30, and I think I just about got it. She's about to be a third generation specialized teacher. The students should be able to figure out what I want them to do on their own. It can happen. All you're going to have are disruptions. So if that's your expectation, you might want to be looking for another career. It's kind of like people tell me, I've been doing this for 30 years, and I want it to be the way it used to be. It's never going to be that way again. We're never going backwards. So we need to not look back and to look forward as to how we can change it. You guys exemplify that just by being at a conference where technology is the target. The students will do it because I said so. Does that work for your kids?
Yeah.
I shouldn't have to repeat myself. You do. And if they haven't gotten it by now, they're never going to get it.
It worked
what?
It worked what?
It did the first grade.
Oh, yeah, right. They can't get your goat if they don't know where it's tied. So with that, I want to say thank you. If you guys have any questions, there's my email address. I would be happy to respond to any email. So please fill out your evaluations. Make sure.
Sometimes it takes a couple days, but that's why.
And I hope I see some of you this year in our RTI project. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.